welcome to the Sunday show with me, Chris Stain. Unfortunately, Neil De Beer cannot be with us today. He's still very ill. However, his old comrade, the former double agent and Mandela spy, Brad Stain, is with us. Welcome, Brad.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for having me on. I think we must be related somewhere down the line, but yeah, thanks for the kind introduction and big boots to fill here, you know, with my brother Neil De Beer, and I please ask the biz news community to keep him in their prayers, because prayer is a powerful thing, and yeah, I wish he was here with us today, but he's getting better, hopefully.
Brad, with your background and your experiences of both governments and the current work you're doing as a security consultant, you have deep insight into the political situation in South Africa. I'd like to ask you, why do you think President Cyril Ramaphosa has been such a disappointment? What is behind his failures?
Well, in essence, it's a long story, but I'll keep it as brief as possible. Look, our citizens had so much hope in Cyril Ramaphosa, but not all of us. Old MK veterans, I need to elaborate and say the real MK, not this version 2.0, hacked by this pity party version that's been stolen. But intelligence people, people that were read in, people that knew where the skeletons were in the closet. And, you know, I encourage our youth to look at, for instance, old videos of our hero and Commander Chris Hani. He was freaking furious with the decisions and the nonsense. At that stage, Comrade Ramaphosa was whispering in the hallways while backdoor deals were being made in the years of Madiba and Tambo and our ANC executives at the time. And this is pre-94. I want people to think for themselves because, you know, a lot of people undermine South Africans. But we have to really have a very good look at why do we think that the apartheid state secretly colluded with some in the ANC that had their own agendas, and then Chris Hani was brutally assassinated. Look, yeah, and then we need to go further back and have a look at, you know, the background and the craftiness of Cyril Ramaphosa is not to be underestimated. He's an incredibly astute person. He's been in this political environment for many years. But I just want you to take you back to the CR17. Political nomination manipulation that took place within his very ANC-NEC conference to get nominated. The race was between Mrs. Zuma at the time and himself. But what Cyril Ramaphosa did at that time was get the very Senzo Mchunu that's all over the press at the moment to run a smoke and mirrors campaign in the background. And then he got the National Police Commissioner at the time, Sithole, to use state funds to go and get some cyber intelligence software. We call them grabbers and stingrays. And in essence, what they're used for those folks that don't know, it's like a fake cell phone tower that allows intelligence services that used this in national security operations to actually get internet users, email users, and cell phone users to connect their phones to this fake tower. And then what they can do is reverse engineer it, and they can look in and see what messages are being sent, text messages and email messages, to see who they were most likely going to vote for, were they going to vote for Dr. Zuma, or were they thinking about voting for Cyril. And what they would then figure out is then Mtunu would go in and have a look and at the stats and at the data and say, okay, now we need to go and approach this comrade and this group of comrades to convince them to rather vote for President candidate Ramaphosa, or Ramaphosa, as I like to refer to him. So that's what a stingray does. So, you know, there's been a lot of history with this the way that President, rather Cyril Ramaphosa has done things. But let me be incredibly clear that the real people that sold out our liberation was not Nelson Mandela. The real people that sold out our liberation was Cyril Ramaphosa and then Jacob Zuma. You know, and it's not like, you know, we didn't warn the leadership at the time under Jonah Sala, who our handlers at the time, myself and Neil's handler, was Jeremy Vieri and Andre Lincoln. You know, we were instructed when we were double agents to get as much information and intelligence as we can on what was going on in the statecraft that was actually happening. And in fact, Neil and I found, you know, the infamous list of the Askaris, the Impimpis. And when I say infamous, people like Blades Amande talk about this list, and Umsholozi, Jacob Zuma being on this list and being on the apartheid government's payroll. And we found this list in the office of the head of the security police in the Western Cape. And a lot of your listeners might recognize the name of Major Andy Miller, or rather Andy Miller, because later on he became the head of the South African Police Union. So at the end of the day, what does all this information tell us? That there's unethical leadership that has from a very early stage manipulated the honor and the dream and the foresight of what Oliver Tambo had in mind for us, Govan and Mbeki, you know, the good people that were in the ANC. And look now today, Nomhlanje, the mess we are in as a country. But, you know, rather than, so you know, Cyril Ramaphosa gets into power, but, you know, rather than fumigating it, you know, he slowly just walked justice into a coma state. His so-called new dawn became no action. He's got no backbone, no exit strategy. There's been no conviction of Zondo Commission, ANC cadres, that are clearly guilty for betraying their post and their oath. And then we have a look at things like Fala Fala. That just symbolizes it all right there. The secrecy, the suspicion, and the silence. And, you know, the ANC has been sold out. And, you know, the factions run the show. The President Ramaphosa is, in essence, a prisoner of his own party secrets. And I recently heard something, Prince Mashatile, the author's statement, that President Ramaphosa will end up in jail. And I'm telling you, I agree with him. But it's going to happen when South Africans catch a wake up. Because, you know, we unfortunately believe in the rule of... Well, fortunately, we believe in the rule of law. But unfortunately, we think that government is going to step up and do the right thing. But yeah, not right now.
Talking about the rule of law, Brad, your impressions of the KZN whistleblowing general. I think you do know him.
Yeah, General Lucky Makwanazi. Yeah, what a brave man, and what an incredibly rare act of courage in a culture of silence, and where people walk on eggs because they're scared they're going to get poisoned, assassinated. Look, yeah, Makwanazi is not the first police general to risk his career by speaking to power. Jeremy Viery did it. Actually, with the Sithole grabbers, they blew the whistle along with Andre Lincoln and General Peter Jacobs. They were like, President Ramaphosa has used this illegal intelligence classified software to further his own political agenda. And then we've seen people like Colonel Kinnear. You know, the difference is that I think General Lucky Makwanazi was inspired by Minor Neil, the Beers former handler, Andre Lincoln, who became a general, who ran the anti-gang unit, and who's blown the whistle on a few things that were wrong. And I don't know if it is because when my brother and I handed that list of the Skaris and Impimpis to Andre and to Jeremy, and then they handed it to Jonah Klala. And then there's that famous, I suggest your viewers here go and have a look at the interview with Blade, Comrade Blade, where he talks about this infamous list that Madiba came and he said he didn't know how to deal with it, and it was very troubling. And you know, at the end of the day, you know, we have a term in the intelligence community where somebody gets burnt. I don't know, there's that TV show, The Burn Notice. So it's a real thing. And I think Jeremy and Andre got burnt because, you know, let's cracky for Koa Pop Die owns. And they're brave guys. They grew up on the Cape Flats. They didn't run away and go into exile. They stayed in our country and they fought for our people. These are true heroes. So, you know, I think that when I saw Lucky Makwanazi at with that other general in the Western Cape that we're not too crazy about, I rather wish Makwanazi stood up and did the state eulogy. But yeah, well, who am I to ask? But What I think was Makwanazi, Neil was there at the funeral, Jeremy Vieri was there, and myself. And as we lay our friend and our brother and our hero to rest at the state funeral, and Alan Busak stood up and he said, "Andre died of a broken heart," and that's true. And I think it's lit a fire in a lot of us to do the right thing. And that's why I do the activism I do. And that's why my brother, Neil De Beer, left the ANC and said, "Bugger these guys." And later on, I left the ANC because we know about all this nonsense. People think Jacob Zuma knows about all the skeletons in the closets, etc. We are intelligence veterans. And we know what happened in the background, and we know what's going on. And lucky Makwanazi is heartful because he has seen what happens to Sholkanya, to Peter Jacobs, to Vieri and Lincoln, when they go the legitimate route and they follow procedures and they are disciplined. They get burnt. They get thrown under the bus. Andre Lincoln was vilified. He ended up having to mow lawns and clean people's gardens because he was put on suspension. For years, he fought court cases. They threw so many charges at him, and they all got thrown out. And he still hasn't been paid and back paid. And his widow's struggling today. This is the very man that also, mind you, exposed the assassination plot and foiled the assassination plot against Madiba in 1994. That's how we treat our national heroes. So that's why Neil walked away. I walked away. And we're hutful for this circus. The cock and hara here. It's unethical. So when Lucky Makwanazi was inspired by this, because he knew Vieri and Lincoln very well, especially Lincoln, they worked very well together and very closely together on high-level crime situations. So him not following the protocol of cap in hand, "I'm sorry, but I need to report this," and then it just gets pushed under the rug. Ikonawena is like, "No way, I'm done with this. I need to not follow protocol anymore," and he had to step up and shake up the system. His revelations have exposed SAPS deeply politicized, meaning that our national security and law enforcement clusters are not run in an apolitical manner, which they should be. There should be no political agendas when it comes to safety and security in our nation. So, you know, he's an incredibly brave man. And, I'm very proud of him. And I know Neil's very proud of him as well. And, you know, but we have bigger problems. You know, we have a captured national security cluster, including the Office of National Intelligence, that has conveniently been moved into the union buildings, a highly irregular move with these Minister Chaveni, this lady that has corruption and a stink around her that it's quite unsightly. So, you know, the special inquest is not just what happened. It's a line in the sand. And we are going to protect our truth tellers and no longer bury them like we had to, Babita, Diokaran, who's actually involved in this very case with this clown cat that thinks that carries on and terrorizing people in Mamelodi, you know, outside Pretoria where I grew up. We can't build a lawful country if we keep betraying the people who are trying to clean it up.
Brad, talking about the policing, what are your impressions of the incoming acting police minister Kachalia?
Look, he's highly respected in academia. You know, he's got a credible name, but I'm just concerned. This is just another cadre deployment, and I'll go back to being apolitical in this, and not having a political agenda, and putting the needs of our country first, which is the most important thing. And so he brings a lot of intellect, but can he take on the entrenched rot? And if he wants to succeed, he must back whistleblowers like General Makwanazi. He needs to purge saps of political puppets pulling the strings. And most importantly, he needs to rebuild trust within the public, starting on places like the Cape Flats, where people can't even protect themselves. The government and the state is. I just did an interview on a radio station about Gulf community members that are community safety members, but now Sierra and the police have gone in there and arrested them, I guess to divert bad optics that they're having, because the state has failed looking after the people in our most vulnerable communities. Imagine, Chris, that in our white suburbs, where there's not as much crime as there are on the Cape Flats, that we couldn't afford security guards to protect our kids at school. And then we organized like we do so brilliantly in this country from a grassroots point of view. And we come together and we make a plan, because South Africans are brilliant like that. And we create a safe environment for our kids. But this, you know, they've got it all arse backwards. Alles die mekaar. It's like ice cream, you know. It's very, very frustrating.
The factions in the African National Congress are deepening as people are positioning themselves for the next president of the African National Congress.
Yeah. Factional warfare disguised as democracy choice. It's, what we're witnessing isn't democracy, it's survival and a contest for the corrupt elites. You know, this ANC is a mess. Mashitile, that oak, he's an absolute nightmare. And, you know, all they do is just fill their coffers and continue to enrich themselves. Makwezi and even Lamola are playing chess for 2027. And even a move, and every move is shadowed by dirty money, spy games, and fears of prosecution. The next ANC leader will need more lawyers than voters. And the ANC is not the ANC that, and we all know that. We all know that it hasn't been that for many, 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 many years. And it's a pity because there are some good guys like, you know, Muhammad Khalid Sayed, who we know very well. He's ethically, he's a good person. But, you know, he won't get, and unfortunately, I'm afraid, I don't think he's going to get anywhere because of the Bantustan racism. It's a massive obstacle in the ANC because you are a different color and you're not black. And, you know, that's why even in the police, a lot of people don't get the promotions that they need to get. And they've spent years in the police, but rather they'll give their cousin a brigadier job. But they'll do a backdoor deal that you must give them a machocho of a few thousand rand a month. So, you know, there's a lot of things broken. And unfortunately, and I respect the elderly in our country so much, and the pain and suffering that they've been through, and I respect their loyalty. But this is not what the ANC was meant to do.
Let's talk about another party, the Patriotic Alliance, seemingly the fastest growing party in South Africa, but now its Deputy President Kenny Kuneni, or Sushi King, has been suspended after being found at the house of a murder suspect, and he has now resigned as Joburg City Councillor and MMC member. Your take on that, Brad?
You know, I've said on this show that with Alec that I like Gayton McKenzie, and I thought Gayton McKenzie and Neil would make such a formidable force together. But, you know, I got to give kudos to Gayton McKenzie for immediately as soon as that came up, he didn't do what the ANC would do and hum and ha and teta about it and talk about it and chat and go for dinners. And Gayton McKenzie came in there and he suspended it. Let's be realistic here. You know, the clown leaves, but the circus remains. Kuneni's politics was performance art from the get-go. There's no leadership. But, you know, in a country like this, when the system is so broken, and you know, I respect a lot of things that they have done because they are so frustrated. You know, for instance, kicking illegal people out of buildings that have been hijacked by people, and they did that in the past so that, you know, they could get our citizens into housing, etc., and get rid of people like, what's that operation called in Joburg? That operation in Joburg where, you know, they, you know, are fed up because government is not doing anything. But, you know, your country, you know, your country, you know, when you know your country's in trouble, when sushi platters make policy.
Right. Meanwhile, you have spent quite a lot of time abroad, also in America. What do you make of a diplomatic war between South Africa and the United States?
Yeah, you know, it wasn't safe for Neil and I to live in South Africa for a few years. And both Neil left, he had to leave, and he went to Scotland because they tried to kill us. And I ended up staying in the United States. It wasn't by choice because, you know, all these people in exile came and we had to leave because it was too dangerous because we were doing the real work on the ground there. But South Africa is punching way above their diplomatic weight and way below our ethical belt. And, you know, Neil covers this, and he's been spot on with this in saying, you know, for instance, BRICS. BRICS is the big, big obstacle here because, you know, South Africa is this administration, this ANC administration, and is cuddling up to people like China and Russia, both authoritarian regimes and powers with zero regard for democracy and human rights. Just switch on the TV and you see it. You know, fine, they challenged Israel at the ICJ, but then they remained silent on Putin's war crimes or China's detention camps. You know, it's BRICS is not a moral alliance. It's an opportunistic economic bloc, in my opinion, built on double standards and dirty deals, backhands, machochos, bribes. You know, so on U.S. relations, you know, I will say this, the U.S. is right to be alarmed. I spent several years when I was in the United States because of my background consulting within, you know, the intelligence community. And, you know, South Africa has become a haven for Iranian intelligence. There's evidence that Iran has been funding the ANC factions because they didn't have any money. And Ramaphosa is not going to go into his couch at Falla Falla and grab some shillete and dollars out of that couch and back himself like any ethical person would do, especially with a legacy party like the ANC. You know, you want to do the right thing and bring people up and bring it up and try and save it, try and do the right thing, but no. So, you know, there's evidence all over the place that that they're colluding with these foreign intelligence agencies like the Iranians and giving them carte blanche here in our country to do whatever they want to do. You know, look, they load ships with illegal weapons and munitions, and they end up in different countries in different war zones. So there's zero, AICO, accountability, you know, from the State Security Agency. And now the U.S. is responding with sanctions and tariffs. But I'll tell you one thing, unfortunately, is that the tariffs are, and they're supposed to come out now in August, the tariffs are going to do more damage to the so-called farmers that POTUS, President Trump, is trying to apparently help, because the brave farmers that are saying there's no genocide, because let's be honest, there is no genocide, okay? There's brutal, brutal murders on farms. And I know all about it because my brother-in-law was brutally murdered on our farm in 2018 in Nelspruit. So I understand how bad this is and how bad the situation is. But the situation is a crime situation. And you know, kudos for the U.S. for actually saying something to these guys that are trying to hide behind our legacy of our freedom struggle. But it was captured in the early days already. But here's the real tragedy is that this is going to affect our food security in this country, because our farmers are not going to be able to make enough money to support, they pay the farm workers, they pay, the money goes towards our GDP, you know, they'll hammer our citrus, grape growers, table grapes are massive exports into the United States. So our most vulnerable people are going to suffer the most. So the real genocide is an economic genocide, and it's going to hit our heartland and our agricultural heartland. And I just want to touch on the BEE-based race policies. You know, BEE was meant to uplift the disadvantaged. And, you know, the greatest champion for that was Chris Hani, because that's why Neil and I, I won't speak for him, but he could speak for himself. But, you know, we had the utmost respect for that man, because his first and foremost priority was the upliftment of the poorest of our people in our country, the people that have been left behind and the people that had been oppressed under apartheid. And this BEE is just catering for the small elite, politically connected millionaires. And it's not working. And Ramaphosa will get up there and pose and say, yeah, it's great. We need this. This is going to help our people. It's just helping the fat cats get richer. And the U.S. and the global investors are losing patience with this race-first laws that reward the corrupt and exclude our poor. So economic justice shouldn't be about who knows who in the zoo. It should be about what you do to build and grow and contribute, because South Africans are resilient, but once we get hot for, then hopefully, here's the thing. We've weaponized transformation into a tender cartel. And now the world's pulling back the curtain. And, you can't blame them. And here's the other thing. South Africa is going to the international, laying cases against Israel. But, they can't even sort out their own cuck they have in their own backyard here in South Africa. So it's pretty frustrating.
Indeed. Thank you. That was security expert Brad Steyn, an old comrade of BizNews favorite Neil De Beer, speaking to BizNews. And I'm Chris Steyn here on The Sunday Show. Thank you, Brad.
Thank you very much for having me, and God bless you all.